Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest effort to scuttle the nomination of Senator Chuck Hagel to be Secretary of Defense with a full-page attack ad in Thursday's New York Times by the Log Cabin Republicans. A longtime Pentagon insider and designer of the A-10 and F-16 fighters, Pierre Spray, joins us to discuss why he thinks Hagel would be a bad choice and Michelle Flournoy or Ashton Carter even worse. Then, with the Tea Party all but shutting down the Congress and the ship of state heading over the fiscal cliff, we will speak with journalist and author Gary Weiss about the ideological underpinnings of the obstructionists and their billionaire backers. He is the author of Ayn Rand Nation, The Hidden Struggle for America's Soul, and we will discuss the wealthy acolytes of Ayn Rand who have taken over the Cato Institute and Freedom Works. Then finally, we will speak with Dina Racer about her article at Truthout, Slow Rolling Massacre Unfolds in the Shadow of Shocking High-Profile Shooting Sprees, which explores the contrast between the intense media focus on the recent killing of schoolchildren in an affluent Connecticut neighborhood and what happens almost every day in poorer neighborhoods across America where school kids are gunned down with barely a mention in the press. I'm now speaking with Pierre Spray, who is a veteran high-tech defense weapons and systems designer, as well as a highly regarded producer of avant-garde jazz and other genre recordings. Pierre Spray was the primary designer of two key Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet. He left the Pentagon in 1986 and went on to found Maple Shade Records. Welcome to Background Briefing, Pierre Spray.
Hey, Ian. Great to talk to you.
And today's Thursday's New York Times has a full-page ad featuring a picture of a very sinister-looking Senator Hagel, and the caption reads, "Chuck Hagel, wrong on gay rights, wrong on Iran, wrong on Israel. Tell President Obama that Chuck Hagel is wrong for Defense Secretary." And then, as a sort of afterthought, help us create a stronger and more inclusive Republican Party. Donate today to the Log Cabin Republicans. This is, of course, a part of a sustained attack on he's not an official nominee to become Secretary of Defense, but seems to be somebody that the White House has floated. What's your sense of this campaign, Pierre?
Well, this is so clearly fueled by the Israeli lobby, or I should say more precisely, the Likud lobby, because, of course, the Israeli lobby itself in America has changed a lot over the years and has become just an adjunct of right-wing Israeli politics, not of all Israelis and certainly not of all American supporters of Israel. But Chuck Hagel is, like the other two candidates, you know, guaranteed to be a terrible Secretary of Defense. The thing I like best about him is simply the people who attack him. And I'm almost tempted to say we should all back him just in order to hand those people a defeat, because it's quite outrageous between, you know, the simply obstructionist Republicans and the people who serve and kowtow to the Israeli lobby, who've been campaigning night and day against Hagel. It'd be wonderful to see them handed a defeat. But that's the last good thing I can say about appointing Hagel as Secretary of Defense.
Well, certainly people have come to Hagel's defense. A rabbi in his home state of Nebraska, the last four national security advisors wrote an open letter castigating the president for hanging these people out to dry and not appearing to stand by them, which seems to be a kind of MO of the White House, or at least of the Obama White House. It's hard to believe, though, that Obama, after he got rolled on his choice for Secretary of State, Susan Rice, that he would allow himself to be rolled again. Do you think he will?
I'd say it's more likely than not, simply because, you know, a very major portion of, you know, his campaign was leaning exactly on the same people who were attacking Hagel. You know, the Israeli lobby was a tremendously important component, particularly of his first campaign, and, of course, less so in the last campaign since the lobby elected to back, you know, whatever Bibi Netanyahu wanted. And obviously Bibi didn't care for Obama too much.
Well, then all the more reason Obama should stick by Hegel. But
well, he should, but my guess is that, you know, in his usual calculation of American political power balances over everything else, you'll see that there's no point in taking on the Israeli lobby over a Secretary of Defense. They'll all be, you know, they'll all be patsies, basically, for the military-industrial complex. So what difference does it make whether it's Hegel or Flournoy or, God help us, Ashton or Carter?
Well, it's certainly there is a pattern there with Obama, and apparently Obama himself thought that the Supreme Court was going to strike down his signature, which is the Affordable Care Act, the so-called Obamacare, which he's never sold. He's never stood by that, and he was even prepared for a defeat on that, and wasn't going to fight particularly. You know, he's apparently, once he decides that he doesn't want to spend political capital on a losing battle, he doesn't. The reason I'm talking to you, Pierre, is that you're actually not one of the crazy neocons and who brought us the Iraq disaster, but you have some objections to the nomination of Senator Chuck Hagel to be the Secretary of Defense.
Well, to be even-handed, let me tell you, I object equally to all three current candidates, or you know, right. said to be candidates. Hagel is a guy who was famous in the Senate for, you know, making a few kind of bold-sounding statements, including even some doubts as to whether we had to support Israel more than 98%, and who never, ever voted those convictions. You know, just a guy who make a bold statement, walk away from it, and vote against it. He came into the Congress supposedly representing the veterans, and that he would never let a veteran go to war again in some useless war because he experienced Vietnam himself. What happened? He voted for Kosovo. Not only did he vote for bombing in Kosovo, he voted for ground troops in Kosovo. He voted for Iraq. You know, he had made some statements about some doubts about Iraq. When the vote came around, he voted straight up and down the line for Bush and headlong into Iraq. He voted for Afghanistan. He voted for every increase in the defense budget every single year that happened on his watch. He voted for the Patriot Act, even after making nice statements about American rights. You know, I mean, this is a guy who, you know,
wants it both ways.
Simply doesn't stand up for anything. And and his background, his business background, is, to say the least, very unsavory. So that doesn't add confidence to, you know, what he would do as Secretary of Defense, you know.
You mean because he was a part owner of a company that made voting machines?
Well, it's worse than that. I mean, you know, look, let's track his whole business history. He was a lobbyist for Firestone. He was a fundraiser for Reagan. He joined an investment kind of vulture capital company, and they were the ones who put up the money for this stealthy Republican operation to start a voting machine company, you know. And that was the voting machine company that later became known as Election Systems and Software, that turned out those really vulnerable to rigging voting machines that Ohio was so fed up with them, they actually sued the company. That's what shabby stuff they delivered. But that was very deliberate. You know, it wasn't an accident that he was the Republican head of an investment company that could put up that money, and he became the chairman and the CEO of that company in its founding. So, and today, what is he? He's on the board of Chevron, one of the smelliest of the oil companies. Not that there's much difference amongst them. And Deutsche Bank, you know, who's been involved in the most horrendous rip-offs on the financial market. He's on both boards. So you put a guy like that in as Secretary of Defense and you expect something good to happen?
Again, I'm speaking with Pierre Spray, who's a veteran high-tech defense weapons and systems designer, as well as a highly regarded producer of avant-garde jazz and other genre recordings. Pierre Spray was the primary designer of two key Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet. He left the Pentagon in 1986 and went on to found Maple Shade Records. So let's turn to the other two, because there's a chance, okay, as you've suggested, that Obama will cave, and to some extent that appears to be his MO. Let's turn to Michelle Flournoy. I was talking yesterday with Steve Clemens, who was on Hardball with Chris Matthews and was kind of upset by some of the MSNBC women that sort of babble on quite a bit. In this case, a woman called Crystal Ball and Karen Finney, who were saying how wonderful it would be to have a woman as Secretary of Defense. And Steve Clemens was complaining that they obviously don't know anything about this woman's record, that she's an absolute favorite of the military-industrial complex. In fact, she founded a group, a front group for the military-industrial complex.
Right. She's a very different kettle of fish than Chuck Hagel. She's somebody who's basically been a think tank policy wonk all her life. She's studied social studies. She hasn't the slightest idea which end of a rifle fires. You know, no idea of weapons, no idea of how to buy weapons, no idea how to manage them, and no idea of, you know, of what the real problems of armies are. She's simply, you know, a gifted writer of policy wonkery, and that's what she's been doing all her life. She kind of built that that career into a deputy assistant secretary of defense position under Clinton, in which she did exactly the same thing, turned out endless reams of totally hopeless paper on strategy that had nothing to do with what anybody in the Pentagon did about people, about weapons, about organizing, about, you know, curing big problems in the Pentagon. It was just this endless ream of paper. Then she left again, went back to the world of policy wonks, started after being rising, you know, quite handily in Washington think tank. She started her own think tank, the Center for New American Security, that turned out to be a total propaganda front for, you know, for Democratic policy wonks. She funneled a whole bunch of people through her center into the Pentagon. They got nice positions. She wrote a lot of propaganda on behalf of this ridiculous counterinsurgency, supposedly new strategy that Petraeus backed. She was a big, big backer of Petraeus, one of the biggest in Washington. And she parlayed all that into an Undersecretary of Defense for Policy in 2009 under Obama.
Mm-hmm. But her think tank wasn't it funded by big defense contractors?
It's not known. I'll tell you one thing: she refused to say who funded her. So, So that's not a good sign. The really good think tanks that work on defense, there aren't many of them, very publicly state we take no money from defense contractors. That's the only way to work on defense.
Sure, sure.
So since she refuses to say it, you can bet your bottom bippy she's getting lots of money from defense contractors.
Let's turn P.S. Bray, to Ashton Carter, unless there's something more egregious you have to report about this woman.
She's the classic policy apparatchik, and Ashton Carter is kind of her symmetrical dual. He's the classic high-tech policy wonk. He got a degree, a Ph.D. in physics, never did a lick in physics after that, and immediately joined the think tank world up around Harvard and the Kennedy School and MIT, and then rode that into a deputy assistant secretary position also under Clinton, doing all kinds of policy papers on nuclear proliferation, which is like an endless, useless morass, and a whole bunch of stuff about supposedly protecting, you know, the loose uranium in the former Soviet Union. He was deeply involved in that. That hasn't come out too well. And then he left there, you know, and joined the real hardcore high-tech advocacy world. He joined up with Bill Perry, who's been a shill for, you know, the high-tech defense industry and a big mover and shaker for high-tech in Democratic circles ever since President Carter.
Wasn't he one of the big proponents of stealth?
Of course. He was the inventor of stealth as a billion-dollar program. He didn't invent stealth at all.
No.
It existed under the Germans. But he turned it into a multi-billion-dollar program and a super-secret program that nobody could oversee.
Right, and it's been the biggest disaster in defense procurement because it's created these absolutely worthless airplanes.
Right, exactly. He's the author of that. And Ashton Carter went to work for that master.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about, again, Pierre Spray is a veteran high-tech defense weapons and systems designer and was the primary designer on two key Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet. Now, the F-35, which is the biggest defense contract in history, it's mm-hmm. about 30% of all of the Pentagon's procurement. It's about, 1.6 to close to $2 trillion it's going to cost. And it's a complete dog, as is the F-22 that preceded it. And the F-35 is going to replace the plane that you designed, the F-16, and the F-16 outperforms it.
In every way. In every mission you could think of, the F-16 waxes it, And Ashton Carter is, in recent memory, in the last 5 years or so, is one of the principal architects of the cover-up for the F-35 disaster. He was the acquisition czar when the real, real openings came that showed the disasters in testing, the disasters in cost overrun, the lying that was going on about the program. And a lot of this was being discovered in the Pentagon, actually, by the managers of the program, the people who were testing it. They were all reporting this. The cost estimating people were saying that the costs being put forth by the program and by Lockheed were just, you know, ludicrous. And he was the guy who smoothed all of that over, fronted for the disaster, and kept it going, approved going forward instead of kind of stopping it, regrouping, recasting the program. He did a kind of phony reorganization of the program that didn't amount to a hill of beans and that kept the money flowing to Lockheed without interruption.
Well, just in closing then, Pierre Spray, why is Obama giving us these lousy choices? Chuck Hagel, then Flournoy, who's even worse, and then Ashton Carter, who you've described as being appalling. So what's going on with Obama? He's not going to clean up the Pentagon, in other words?
Not a chance. I mean, imagine if he did. I mean, just stop and think. Think about what would be unleashed, the forces that would be unleashed, the amount of money that would attack him, you know, the propaganda, the increased slander, the attacks on his patriotism, all of that. You know, a guy who makes political calculations in his position as coldly as he does simply isn't going to take on the military-industrial complex. You know, why would he appoint a Secretary of Defense who will cause the roof to fall in on him? So there's not a chance that the U.S. will have a decent Secretary of Defense, and we haven't had one in a zillion years. You know, I mean, I've tracked very carefully every Secretary of Defense since 1960, and I know of not a single one who made any serious sacrifice for a matter of principle, with a minor exception of Melvin Laird, who was hardly a good Secretary of Defense, but, you know, he was a congressman who came in and under Nixon, but he did come in totally determined to wind down the Vietnam War, and he took some personal risks for that. He worked at it. Mm. He worked at it night and day. And he had enough stature that Nixon couldn't stop him from doing it. But that's the last Secretary of Defense I know that took any chances at all for a matter of principle. All the rest of them let the horrors of, exploding budgets, shrinking forces, ever more expensive weapons.
More toys and less boys, yeah.
Exactly. Have let that roll. Not a single one has put a dent in it. You know? And Laird included. The only thing he wanted to do was to get us out of Vietnam, and he took some risks for it. So I give him some credit, since nobody I know of since then took any chances for anything. You know, the last few included Gates and Panetta. Good God. You know, if there ever was a political hack, it's Panetta.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, P.S. Bray.
Okay.
Again. Again, I've been speaking with Pierre Spray, who's a veteran high-tech defense weapons and systems designer, as well as a highly regarded producer of avant-garde jazz and other genre recordings. He was the primary designer of two key Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet. He left the Pentagon in 1986 and went on to found Maple Shade Records. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the ideological underpinning of the obstructionists who have basically shut down the Congress and let the ship of state head for the fiscal cliff.